welcome to The Two Tones. It's episode 22. Tony DeBolfo, the Beast. How are you, Tone?
How are you, Tony? Lovely to see you.
Good. And Tony Moclair here. Plenty to talk about. The team have... They're currently on the plane to Brisbane.
Yes, they are.
Although they will be in Brisbane by the time the podcast is pushed out, so to speak. But before we get to previewing the Brisbane game, let's talk about the Collingwood game, Tone. I'm very keen to get your thoughts because there's quite a bit to discuss in that crowd of about 50,000 there. I think it was 48.
About 48,000, Tony. And might I say, just while I'm on the hobby horse from the outset, you know, we're 17th now on the ladder. Collingwood are, you know, thereabouts, but possibly unlikely to make the eight. And yet, the Carlton-Collingwood game still generate 48,000 people. I noted with interest that the Bulldogs v Port Adelaide generated something like 20,000 at Etihad.
Wow.
Now, the Bulldogs are fourth.
Yeah.
And the president of the Western Bulldogs, Peter Gordon, has been quite outspoken in trying to get... his team the big gig on Friday night.
Yeah.
Now, I would have thought that for a crowd of 20,000, you'd want to perhaps do a little bit better than that. And I might say that of all the games over last week's round, only the Richmond-Adelaide game at Football Park generated more in terms of attendances than Carlton-Collingwood. So I think when you look at the Carlton-Collingwood story, it's the story, the 100-year story,
yeah,
that still gets people through the gate. And I think that that is a game that needs to be really preserved and protected by the AFL. I think for too long, games like that, traditional rivals in Melbourne, are taken for granted. And if the crowds at those games are eroded, well, to my way of thinking, that's collateral damage to the jewel in the crown of league footy.
Yes.
And I think we have to be mindful that these are the games, the big marquee games, that need to be protected. That is my say.
That's a most excellent point, Tony DeBolfo. You can't, you're right, you can't clamour for the bigger venues if you have trouble pulling skin off custard, as they say. So, and you're right, there is so much brand equity, to use a wanky kind of corporate term, but there is immense brand equity in Carlton Collingwood.
Very true, and as a long-time lover of custard, Tony, I love that analogy.
Well, ain't it the truth. So, back in your box, Footer Scray. Look, it was, I got to say, in the start of the first quarter, I thought we may struggle to get 25,000 here. It did look a bit thin on the ground. I was actually a little bit surprised to see that crowd figure at halftime.
Well, certainly the case, and I too shared your fears, and in fact so much so that before the game, leading into the week, I went to the record books to find out what the lowest drawing crowd between Carlton and Collingwood on the MCG actually was.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, it was the crowd that Collingwood generated against Melbourne the week before, 37,000, but it was for a semi-final, Carlton-Collingwood semi-final in 1921.
Right, when the population of Melbourne was about probably 800,000.
Very, very true. It was probably a good crowd then.
Yeah.
But I must admit, going into the game, I did harbour some fears that record might be skittled. But 48,000 fronted up, and it was a Collingwood home game, I admit. But all power to the people that turned out in support of the Carlton team.
It was, if you remove the first quarter, which was a display of dreadful skills from both sides.
Yes,
It was not the sort of game that you'd want to take an interstate or international visitor to.
It wasn't the showpiece, was
it? No.
And we were talking off here, you know, I can recall just seeing Tom Bell was wreaking havoc early, but had three shots on goal that all sadly went amiss, and then that little short daisy cutter from Andreas Everett to Andrew Walker missed its mark.
Yeah.
Well, that's potentially four goals to nothing in the first 5-10 minutes of the game, which, as we know, was pretty much the margin by game's end.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked off air too about it's been a big talking point this week. You said you missed it, but you couldn't miss it on the replay, the goal assist from Collingwood, the throw, which was part of the goal review. And for some reason, it's not within the powers of the goal review umpire to say, well, I overrule that because it was clearly a free kick to Carlton.
Well, yes, but as I recall, Tony, as I understand it, Fazzolo threw the ball back into play. It was on the line, but it was clearly a throw. But is that the does that fall under the parameters of the goal umpire and the goal review when it isn't impacting on the goals itself? Should have been made by the field umpire, shouldn't it?
True, yeah, but I would say that it is an illegitimate goal by virtue of the fact that the player kicking the ball had received a thrown ball.
But what we don't know is, did the Carlton players protest, and if so, was the protest knocked on the head? Maybe the Carlton players did plead their case at the time. I don't know whether they did or not. Mm. So it gets back to the question of what actually is referred and what's protocol for referrals, you know. And it was an interesting one. But there you go. That was one that got away for sure.
It was as well. You could say seesawing contest. We got within 9 points, I think, at one point, and it looked like Carlton were possibly going to snatch it. Walking away from the G or any venue where Carlton playing this year with your team having lost is not an unusual feeling for any of us. What cushions that blow always is whether or not the team have a dip, and I honestly think they did.
No doubt about it. In fact, at three-quarter time, I remember thinking this game is not over. We are right in this, and we were, as it happened. You know, we really... I mean, Patrick Cripps, that last quarter was phenomenal. And you talk about, you know, seeing the team have a dip, which they certainly did. But what is also terrific, you know, is, again, what Chris Judd referred to as those green shoots. And, you know, you see the way the Cripps basically took control of midfield. And then, you know, you come away even more heartened that you're actually seeing the future of Carlton played out in front of you. And... I don't know if we now get onto the story of Patrick Cripps. Perhaps it's a good segue, but you know, there's this question: is there too much pressure being heaped on the kid? Look, he seems to be that sort of player that absolutely welcomes the heat, you know. And you know, you see him out there. There's no doubt he needs support, because what you've got to remember is there's no Judd, there's no Gibbs. But Cripps seemed to take the heat off Murphy.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's great for Murph, because Murph has been outstanding these past few weeks. But, you know, can't be the lone hand. And I just think it's magnificent that we're seeing Patrick Cripps step up to the plate. And, I mean, he just looks so much in his element where he's playing now. But, you know... we are a team bereft of depth, and as good as a player as Patrick Cripps is going to be, he will need, you know, strength in numbers. So I suppose it's a sort of a yes-no answer, isn't it? But I think what we're seeing is a fellow Patrick Cripps really emerge as a super talent, you know, at the elite level of the game. And that's great for Carlton, it's great for Patrick Cripps, it's certainly great for Mark Murphy and Bryce Gibbs. But we have to also continue to bring good players into the club, you know, because it's strength in numbers that'll, you know, increase the power of Carlton as a legitimate on-field force.
Well, that's what the end of the year is going to be about, you know, draft picks, trades, free agents, all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
It's obviously going to be a crucial time for Carlton. With the overriding, and Soss, I think, knows this. If he doesn't, Soss, I'm sure, listens to the podcast.
Yes.
But, Soss, the overriding directive should be just don't pick spuds. Don't pick the cabbages.
No, don't pick the cabbages. You go for the top shelf. I think... And I hope that supporters, you know, and I do share their pain. I know, you know, we're all suffering, we're all hurting. But I think what we all want to see is some plan. We want to see a direction. And I think there's no ambiguity in the way forward now for Carlton. I think we all understand that it's going to be, the rebuild is on. And it will take time. But I still think it will turn around quickly also, particularly if they get the right sort of player in, you know. I think it would be fair to say that they'll be going for, you know, the long term with their draft selections. There won't be a quick fix sort of players they get in. And personally, if I see players like Cripps going around and actually literally seeing the future of Carlton played out in front of my eyes, I'll cop that, you know. And I think supporters will too, because in players like Patrick Cripps, we see hope.
Yeah.
And hope is what the club has to sell.
Yeah, he's the John Connor who's been sent from the future. It's a Terminator reference, Tone. he does, and I guess you've got to be careful about overburdening one particular player.
Very true.
With all these hopes. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned this when 10 Carlton players turned up at my son's football club. Magnificent effort by all of them. They did a jumper signing at the end, and Levi Casbolt, absolutely thrilled to get Levi there. Was buttonholed by this impertinent 7-year-old and just who said, where's Patrick Cripps? He's a legend. So that says something about Cripps' trajectory this year.
Yes.
Now, he's a great player. Is he standing out because we've had so many injuries and that, I guess, almost exaggerates his talent, if you like.
Isn't that great, though, to hear that story about that young boy that... There's a young kid that now has a hero.
Yes.
Already in the piece. And they're the generation that we really need to get back to Carlton. Because you and I, we've seen the great days of the Carlton Football Club.
We're not going anywhere.
We ain't going anywhere. You don't need to sell the story to us. But it's that generation of supporter who, I suspect might have been poached by Melbourne Victory. Those kids that haven't seen success that we need to get into the place and on the the dark navy blue juggernaut. So this is what we hope. But a further word on Patrick Cripps, Tony. We're getting to the pointy end of the season, obviously, and the discussion is now serviced about the NAB rising star, and looks like a 2-horse race. Patrick Cripps and Jesse Hogan at Melbourne. I really hope history doesn't go against us again, Tony. I should point out that in 1995, Scott Camporeale, in his first year, from all accounts, probably should have won the Rising Star Award.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, lost to Nick Holland of Hawthorn that particular year. And then Mark Murphy's first year, I might recall, was a shoo-in to win the Rising Star. And I think Copeland... was involved that incident which left him with a busted collarbone at the Gabba, and that effectively cost him that award. And of course now we've got Patrick Cripps, in the driver's seat, or so it seems. But there's this massive push for Jesse Hogan, and as good a player as Jesse Hogan is, I again reiterate that Cripps has basically taken control of midfield in the absence of
Chris Judd and
Bryce Gibbs.
So.
In the season after breaking his leg.
Yeah.
So I just hope that history is a little bit kinder to us this year. We haven't had a Rising Star winner since the award's inception, and I do hope that Patrick Cripps is the exception to that rule.
Well, second that.
Yeah.
Most heartedly. Now, that was the Collingwood game. We'll kind of draw a line under that, Tone, and preview Brisbane. Brisbane, interesting the way it looms in Carlton history. Of course, it was the Waterloo of Dennis Pagan all those years ago.
Robert Walls,
yes.
The game here at Princess Park, when I think Kappa kicked that goal after the siren to sink the Carlton Football Club. And I was only talking to Stephen Kernahan this week, actually, we was talking about Walls. Walls he rated probably as the best of his coaches in his time.
Really?
That included Jesselenko and Parkin. And he said Walls, he was the hardest of hard men.
Yeah.
And yet that was his capacity to get the absolute utmost out of the players was what really worked for Sticks. I think Walls too was uncomplicated, whereas with David Parkin, Stephen Curtis's throwaway line always has been, how many dossiers do you actually have to, endure?
Yeah.
So that was that at work for Sticks. And just with Sticks, he always said that he too had an unwritten rule that when he went out, particularly when he became captain, that he felt that he had to raise the bar. And the bar for him was 12 marks a game.
Wow.
He said that was what he thought if he managed to haul in 12 grabs, he'd done his job for the club. And he said, can you imagine how I felt Gary at a Waverley when it was, driving rain?
Yeah.
Thinking, how am I going to pull in 12 here?
Yeah.
But that was a sort of the mindset that he had going into every game. And he did pay credit to Robert Walls in that respect. There's another story, if I may, Tone. I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, in respect of Robert Walls and Brisbane. Robert Walls is back in Melbourne at the moment and has been basically rummaging through the cupboards, you know, just cleaning, tidying up a few loose ends in Melbourne, and has unearthed a paper that Bruce Doole prepared, I think it was around the early 1990s, about the art of defensive play, a paper he prepared for the Brisbane back six, who were playing then when Robert Walls was Brisbane coach.
Wow.
And Walls had actually asked Bruce if he would be prepared to serve as a mentor to the defensive half of the Brisbane team back then, particularly when they were in Melbourne. He would have, you know, first-hand dealings with him. And he said, in the course of the clean-up, I found this letter that Bruce has written that might be of interest to the Carlton archive. So it was great Robert Walls is thinking that way. We just have to get permission from the great man, Bruce, to...
Is that a verbal permission? Because that probably won't happen.
It would probably have probably to be in writing.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, and that was, it was just interesting to hear that, you know, that Bruce at that period of time was seconded by his old teammate here at Carlton to help with the Lions defenders, maybe the Bears then, I'm not sure.
Well, it says something about their relationship, obviously, and the mutual respect.
How close they were and are. Very, very, very true.
Now, as we mentioned, Tone, the team are currently in Brisbane. Brisbane, you could say, aren't travelling very well. So, again, if you do have an international friend visiting, this might not be the game to take them to in terms of skills. But previewing the game, Tone, your thoughts? I know there's been a couple of serious omissions.
Very, very true, Tone. And unfortunately, it pains me to report that that both Levi Casbolt and Simon White are both out with injury. Cameron Wood, who has been a great warrior for the club, I think, this year, big-hearted player, has been omitted, needs a spell. But Levi has tweaked a knee. Regrettably for Simon, he suffered a damage to the PCL in his knee, and that's season over for him. Okay. Thankfully, it won't be a reco. He doesn't require surgery, but it's pretty much the end of the season for him. So these are two players that, you know, will we could ill afford not to have out there. But
can I? I'm just going to go through the list then, because White then joins the list of players who are out for the season.
Yes,
how's this for a list? Byrne, Gibbs, Gowers, Judd. Sheehan, Daisy Thomas, and Robbie Warnock.
All gone for the year.
Yeah.
Well, you could add Simon White to that list.
But that's...
It's devastating. And I mean, look, we need all our players up and running, you know. So, unfortunately, to have so many unavailable, it's really, it's a savage cut to our stocks, that's for sure.
So, how will he... So Lockie is, you're going to park Lockie down the back line then for the entire game to fill that gap?
Well, I suppose that has to be a scenario facing John Barker and the coaching fraternity. I should point out that Christian Jacks has been named for the game, as has been, I think, Matt Dick has been elevated as well. I don't believe Menzel and Yaron have regained their places in the senior 22. So there's still work there to be done in that respect.
Yaron has effectively been sent to Coventry.
Well, he has. And I think what all the team hopes is that, you know, they're looking for a response.
Yeah.
You know, and at this stage, not forthcoming. Doesn't augur well. It's a real shame, I think. You know, Troy Menzel needs to find a little bit of form also. Mm. But again, these are players we can ill afford not to have or to have out of the team. It's really, really hurting us.
But just to backtrack, and I'm sorry to throw this in as it's a question without notice, Tone, but the continuing development of Clem Smith.
Yes.
He's a fascinating study in... I guess effort. He's I guess a bit like Robbo. His physical courage is undoubted. His finish, though, I don't know if he has the polish yet. Am I fair in that assessment?
That's probably a fair comment, actually. You know, he's a player that is still finding his way at senior AFL level. But isn't it great that he brings that vim and vitality to the contest. Yeah. And, you know, current supporters going along, that's what they want to see.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, Smith's commitment to the footy is terrific.
It's
and
a four-quarter commitment too.
It is. And I would like to think that the way he plays does sort of rub off on those around him. I mean, that's the way you want your players to go about their football. And I think Clem Smith's been a real revelation since he's come back into the team, you know, because that's exactly, as I said, you want to see Carlton players attacking the contest and the ball. And, yeah, sure, he may lack a little bit at this stage in terms of his finishing, but, geez, he's not on his Pat Malone.
No,
you know,
he's not.
Our use of the ball by hand and foot has been, you know, really lamentable. You hear the players keep saying they're working at it, but in match day situations, it just seems to fall away. And I think
saying they could get it right by round 22.
Well, I'll tell you this, it's cost Carlton a lot of games this year. It really has. It seems to be a problem that they haven't seemed to be able to rectify. And that's frustrating when you look at it, I believe.
Is that a confidence thing? You know, it's the games that we've won, I mean, talking Port Adelaide in particular, disposal was
lamentable, wasn't it?
Well, from memory, no, they were hitting their targets.
In that game.
You know, there was that kind of, for want of a better phrase, attention to detail.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
It seems to have dropped off.
It seems to have dropped off. It's hard to quantify. I'm not sure how you or what you read into it. I mean, they keep, as I said, they keep saying that they work at it during the course of the week. Seems to be that when the pressure's on, you know, that the precision seems to fall away.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a frustration there, and I don't know. It's a really hard one to rectify. If it was easy, it would have been rectified long ago.
That's true. Speaking of rectification, which line down the spine do you think needs most help? Or which, you know, the back line, the mids, the forward line, which do you think deserves or needs or warrants the greatest assistance?
Look, you know, we need help across the board. Let's not gild the lily. We need them all, really. But I think if you had to isolate one, it'd probably be key defender. I think, you know, like a centre-half back, you know, someone, you know, that with presence that can really help, you know, I guess, bring the back six together. I think that's probably a major need. And, it you know, it's been well documented, but it's very interesting. You know, they say that this year's draft is thin, and yet the players touted as the first to go all seem to be key position players.
Mm.
So you'd like to think that Carlton in that first round will be able to address that need pretty swiftly and find a player that might be able to fit into that slot, but that's my opinion. But look, we just have to keep getting good players into the club, Tony. You know, and as you said earlier, you know, for Stephen Silvani and the people making the calls, I mean, it's a, you know, there is enormous pressure, isn't it, on getting it right? You know, particularly given where Carlton is at, but also looking at it from Sauce's perspective, it's very exciting because I think, in many ways, you look at Carlton, it's a blank sheet. You know, we have to start again and draft for the long term and draft for sustainability to ensure that we are able to, you know, do what Geelong has done, you know, and just maintain excellence, you know.
With the help of Stephen Dank. No, you're not touching that.
Keep me out of that one.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, this year's draft will be fascinating because, well, with any draft, you're really drafting for hopefully the next 10 years, you know, if the players are good enough. But more so this year, you know, the world will be watching Carlton to see which way it goes with its selections. And, Cripps has been a great find, but you know you look at some of the other selections, and unfortunately they've left a little bit to be desired. So we've just got to get it right across the board.
Yeah, there's a parallel team of the century you could have on the wall here at Carlton of bad draft choices that we've made,
and they that'd come be back to haunt.
They come back to haunt.
They really, really hurt, and we're feeling the pain, aren't we?
Yeah. The game is on Saturday at the Gabba, 7:20.
I haven't got a weather forecast yet, Tone. I'm not sure how it is up there. It's whether I guess it'll be a warm one. Not sure, you know, exactly what the conditions will be like. But it's an interesting game, isn't it? I mean, we're both languishing, Carlton and Brisbane, and who knows how this will play out? You know, it's been a lamentable year for both teams, and you just have to hope. Oh,
late breaking mail.
23 Saturday. Oh. It's 18 now. It'll be 23 Saturday. So that's balmy, isn't it? I mean, Tone, get out the sunscreen, the deck chairs, and let's book a flight.
Okay.
Well, here we are in the the dark recesses of the the Princess Park venue. It's cloudy out there. I can see, you know, rain's on the way. What are we doing here?
Well, it's a good question. It is a good question. Also interesting, Lachie Henderson obviously being up there, where his Carlton journey effectively began when he was traded for Brendan Favola. Interesting to see where that journey will end for Lachie as we come up to year's end.
Yes.
We'd love him to stay, obviously, but the rumours are obviously swelling that he's going to Geelong. We'll know, I guess, at season's end.
Yes, we will. We will.
Well, there you go. Check local guides for TV times, etc., etc.
Levi?
Before we go, thank you, Tone, for reminding me.
Well, two things. If you haven't seen Big Levi meeting Little Levi.
Awesome.
Awesome, wasn't it? That was awesome. Great. Just go to the Carlton app and check out that video. It's brilliant. But there is another Little Levi on the scene of sorts. Not quite Levi, but Lonnie Charles Casbolt, Levi's first born son, was born on Friday night, I'm told. I'm not sure whether it went into the wee hours or how it impacted on Levi's game.
Yeah.
I suppose the fact that he's tweaked the knee means he'll spend a little bit more time with Lonnie over the course of the weekend. But all power to Levi on the safe arrival of young Lonnie. And
his partner.
Yeah, and his partner. And I'm told Lonnie's hands are bucket-like. It's a very early call, but let's hope one day we might have Lonnie Charles clunking him at centre forward like the old man.
Well, you'd certainly hope so. Baby, I'm assume was kicking madly in the womb, and hopefully
was he straight
through the
straight
centre. Yes, that's all you
we
want.
We want to know that he was kicking straight.
Well,
there.
To Levi's credit, he drilled his first set shot against Collingwood
and gave it the double cobra. It was magnificent.
How
wasn't
wonderful!
It was good to see. And look, that's been a success story of the year, hasn't it? And
yeah, it has.
Dips the lids to Sav. Sav Rocker has really, really turned around Levi's kicking. And I think when Levi gets the ball now, he's confident within himself that he's going to kick absolutely straight. And for supporters, I think they have a bit more confidence now that, you know, when the big fella grabs it, that there's going to be, a maximum conversion. So good on him. It's great to see. And all power to him for getting through that phase of his kicking, and kicking straight, and that's all you want to see happen.
Damn right we do owe Collingwood one for that. Thank you, Sav, and congrats to Levi on fatherhood. It is an absolutely wonderful thing. How delightful to welcome a little bundle of joy into the world. Good on them.
A big bundle of joy, I suspect.
So. I wonder what the birth weight was. Tipping 9 kilos,
I'll get back to you on that.
All right, thank you. This has been The Two Tones. Thank you to Julian, our producer, stepping in for Luca, who's currently OTR. He's on the road with the team.
Lucky bugger.
And what happens in Brisbane stays in Brisbane. Good luck to the Blues. Remember, Saturday night, the game is 7:20 p.m. We will be back next week. Tony DeBolfo and Tony Moclair signing off here for The Two Tones.